You're listening to NativeTalk.net. Audio files are available online at NativeTalk.net. Be a part of the program by emailing us, podcast@NativeTalk.net. Audio files are available online, so you can listen to the show wherever you go. On the bus, in the shower, out back with the pool boy. Wait, what? Let's start the show. And now, your hosts, Cliff and Brandon, where every day sounds like the weekend. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us today on the NativeTalk.net radio program where Brandon is shining a flashlight in my eye.
It's not even a flashlight. That's the sun.
Oh, really? You're flashing the sun in my eye.
Yeah, that's the benefit of recording in a garage. You have a window that leads right outside.
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, but I was trying to use, what do they call it, Morse code, but I only know one symbol for Morse code.
And I don't know any, so you're not really communicating.
Well, darn it, because I was asking for help.
As always, you can make comments through the Facebook page, which is facebook.com/NativeTalkRadio. Or give us a call. Our phone lines are open. You can leave us a message to be played on the show. That number is 970-278-5791. Now, Brandon, do you remember, it was 2 weeks ago, we skipped last week because of the Super Bowl and everyone was watching the game and not listening to our show, so we took the week off. But before that, we were talking about the folks up on the Pine Ridge Reservation up in South Dakota.
Yeah.
Okay, so we got some listener mail about that. Wait, hold on. I'm gotta waiting.
Holding on. I'll never let go.
There we go. I didn't have my thing up, but now it is. Okay.
That sounds like a person.
Lucia, speaking about the reservation and the troubles that they're dealing with, says, I would like to load up my van and take as many socks, coats, and blankets up there as possible.
Do you
have a contact number for someone over there? Well, Lucia, as a matter of fact, I do. But first, Andrea asks, what would be the address to send a box of clothes? Actually got a lot of people asking where they can send
that
stuff.
That is amazing. Thank you all so much. So that's incredible.
So I talked to somebody over there, and the contact point for the reservation up there, the Singing Horse Trading Post. All right, Rosie Freerer owns the Singing Horse Trading Post, and they're a distribution point. So if you want to help the folks who are having trouble, and you know, it's not like the usual bums just walking the street. These people have 80% unemployment up there, so it's not their fault. Not like the bums walking around in your town.
Oh, wow.
Who don't deserve to be helped.
I like the people walking around in my town. I pay them because they pick up the street and keep all the trash. I'm not just talking about cans and stuff. They're walking around with brooms and sweeping up gutters and stuff. They're keeping it looking nice outside.
You're telling me that the bums in your town are cleaning up the town.
And they do it at like 2 a.m., so they're not in anyone's way.
Those are not bums. Those are those are meth addicts.
Well, they're just doing it on their own, so I just hand them money.
You can for tell more meth.
Hey, if that's what's making my city look pretty, have some green.
All right. Anyway, the Singing Horse Trading Post is located 1210. It says 1210 BIA 33 in Porcupine, South Dakota.
Give it one more just to make sure everyone gets it written down and all that.
Yeah. So 1210 BIA 33 in Porcupine, South Dakota. This is actually located in Manderson, South Dakota. I guess it's Porcupine, but you know, it's kind of like how you might live in Sacramento but have a different address.
Like a suburb of the greater area.
Yeah.
Like Hollywood's in LA kind of thing.
Yeah, like that. So this is in Manderson, South Dakota, which is a community on the Pine Ridge Reservation. So if you're mailing things, you can just mail it to that address. You can
question.
Also, yeah, go ahead.
Can you add that to your homepage so that people can get like the official? Because, you know, I used to work for the post office, and we had to decipher addresses that people. Yeah. Okay. Yay. Yeah. I really did work for the post office. I was great. All right. No. You had to decipher the handwriting that people put down on letters, and man, it can be tough, especially with addresses that aren't necessarily standard. Like stuff in Texas has some weird stuff going on. But if you could put it up on the website, then people could just, you know, copy it from there, and then it can get to the right place.
Yeah, I absolutely will do that. I'll post that on the homepage at nativetalk.net. If you're like Lucia, who wants to, you know, load your van up and drive it up there.
Which is amazing.
From Rapid City, South Dakota, it says take Highway 44 east to about 27 miles to Rocky Ford School. Take a right, drive to BIA 33, take a left, and drive 14 more miles, and you'll find the Singing Horse on the left side of the road. Or
awesome.
Just check out nativetalk.net, where I'll have like all of the information there. All right, let's do something. Oh, no. I forgot. I didn't finish our listener mail. Dolores.
Hi, Dolores.
Dolores says, I'm going to talk with my kids tonight about this. We're going to come up with a family game plan. We're going to start picking out names. This is from the Okini list. OKINI.net has a list of families who has specific needs. Like, hey, help me out with socks. Help me out with underwear. I need
and
flour.
You said it's Okini.com or?
Okini.net.
.net.
Okay. O-K-I-N-I. So you can go there, and specific tribal families who have specific needs listed right there on that site, and you can sponsor a family, whichever one you choose.
That's amazing. I want to do that.
Yeah. We'll go to the website. Okay?
I will.
So her kids, Dolores' kids.
I have the internet right in front of me.
They're going to
do that at the moment.
They're going to pick out names, and then they're going to do chores to earn money and buy them things. That's how we're going to do it. We're also going through our stuff, and I'll be sending some things over next week. Again, I thank you, Clifton, for this link. It's more for us to share what we have. Rochelle says, having been there in winter, these are absolute necessities. I love that there are specifics on this list and the ages of the children. Thank you for sharing. And there are. They tell you the ages of the kids, the sizes they need. Everything is right there.
That is incredible.
Julie says, who do we mail things to? I'm in. Well, Singing Horse Trading Post. Or the Okini list, which is you can help people directly. Bernice said, I would love to know more and be a part. And Ken says, how did this happen to such a proud people? I'm a registered Choctaw by blood, fourth great-grandson of a chief. And my question, with all the work that's opened up there, how could there be no jobs going to them? That's what troubles me. I contacted the Choctaw chief to see if there was something possibly that could be done, and he asked me to get a contact person and maybe a number. He's going to have someone look into it. Well, the charity is nativeprogress.org. Go to nativeprogress.org, and they've got a contact list of everybody there. So anybody who wants to help, I encourage you to check it out and help the people who are in need.
Well, and I love how all of these needs are so affordable. I mean, like one of the
socks.
Things here I'm seeing is like Axe body spray, you know, and stuff like that. And like anyone can help.
Oh, also the youth center that's there. You can find that at nativeprogress.org as well. And they need a lot of stuff. They feed children who wouldn't otherwise be getting fed. So they've got a youth center listed there as well. And it's just basic stuff, man. They're not like, you know, looking for outrageous things. Hey, you have any toilet paper? Send somebody a roll of toilet paper. They're going to be happy, you know?
Yeah, and I like how everything is really specific to the person. You can tell that it's going to someone who genuinely needs that item, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So,
all right,
awesome.
Let's talk about something fun here. What on the list do you want to talk about that's not scratched out, jerk?
Oh, right, the ones under... So, wait. Hold on. You want the stuff under the scribble marks or the ones not covered by scribble marks?
Not covered by scribble marks.
Not covered by. But
Come
then what's
going
to happen to them?
Brandon, we already talked about
them. I'm worried because every time I say something from this list, it ends up with scribble marks on it, and then I can't say it again, and I'm concerned.
Because we've already talked about it. Come on,
for the well-being of the items. I mean, what if I pick totem poles and you scribble it out, and then I can't talk about totem poles next week?
Totem poles! That's what we're talking about.
No! I like those. Why would you do this?
Now, are totem poles something that are used by every tribe everywhere?
I don't think so. No.
No, they're not.
So. No.
We're talking about the specific Northwest tribes specifically. All right. And why did they use it so much up there?
I would guess because of the resources that were around. So
which are like, what?
Trees. Yeah, they're all over the place. So they're kind of necessary in the making of.
And they're quite large.
Yes.
So
it's not just like a spindly little 6-foot tree that you might find in California or something, you know.
No. Anybody who's been to the Pacific Northwest knows there are a lot of trees and they're everywhere up there. So the totem pole was an artistic way that Pacific Northwestern tribes used to tell a story. These were like their hieroglyphs.
They're the skins that you might see in the Midwest or whatnot that they would tell stories on. They would use the totem pole instead, in a way.
Now, you might think that because they loved carving, because they had great artistic ability, and because they loved to tell tall tales, that the Puget Sound area of Washington State in the olden times might have created the first totem pole, but they didn't. This art form was brought to them via trade from tribes along the Pacific coast to the north and from the south, and they just fell in love with the idea and adopted it as their own. And they thought, hey, this is a great way to tell tall tales.
Now, is that cultural appropriation?
I'm going to say yes. That sounds like cultural appropriation. That's like the definition of it, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
So, yeah, they wanted to tell. Maybe they're the first ones who told the story of Paul Bunyan. I don't think so, but
no.
I really enjoy seeing, like, the when I go up there and they've got totem poles, it's, like, awesome just to see it. Because they're not the fakes that you would see, you know, elsewhere, but they're the real deal, you know?
The only one I've ever seen in real life was actually transported to a powwow. Someone brought one and put it up.
Dude, they have one at the Puyallup Tribal Health Authority. Are you not paying attention? You're getting on a plane today, aren't you? When you go up there, they have totem poles literally outside the clinic.
Really?
Yes. You are not paying attention very much at all.
Well, I'm usually with my family and I'm running to the front door because I'm the kind of guy that gets there with just enough time to spare to run. And I must have ran right past him.
Okay.
Seeing
well, him. Since you're going up there, check that out.
I'm going to get a picture of myself in front of it.
So you should. All right, man. We got to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a moment here on the NativeTalk.net radio podcast.
Grab a hanky. This one could get emotional. You're listening to NativeTalk.net.
Our house Grief Support Center's mission is to provide the community with grief support services, education, resources, and hope. Our house, with the support of trained volunteer group leaders, helps those grieving find sweetness in the tears. With your help, you too can become a volunteer and help grieving children, teens, and adults embark on the journey to hope and healing. For more information, visit ourhouse-grief.org or call 888-417-1444.
Hey, this is Steve with thepeoplesammo.com. Do you enjoy the outdoor sportsman lifestyle? We've got the high-quality, reliable ammo you need from home defense rounds to outdoor enjoyment. So check us out at thepeoplesammo.com, where we hold these truths to be self-evident that all ammo is not created equal. Visit thepeoplesammo.com, where you can stock up on the quality rounds you deserve and shoot with confidence. thepeoplesammo.com.
Happy birthday, dear Smokey. Happy birthday, Smokey Bear. The great outdoors and everyone in it thanks you for 70 years of wildfire prevention. For safety tips, visit SmokeyBear.com. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state foresters, and the Ad Council.
The NativeTalk.net radio program with Cliff and Brandon may be fatal if swallowed, but hey, be our guest. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Good morning and welcome back to the NativeTalk.net radio podcast. The message line, if you want to call and drop us a line, is 970-278-5791. And always, visit us online at NativeTalk.net to download and listen to any of our past shows. Brandon, do you know what Bitcoin is?
You know, I've been hearing more and more about it.
What have you heard?
It's an online currency that what I've been hearing most about is that it's being mined and being, you know, translated into real cash profit just for authorizing transactions.
Yeah, well, it is being mined, but what do you think about the whole thing?
Well, it sounds shady as blank to me. I mean, well, the whole concept sounds like it's some online scam, but I guess it's a real deal thing.
Well, it has exploded in value, and what type of people are most commonly associated with using this currency?
I truly don't know.
Criminals.
I would imagine that anybody uses Bitcoin.
No, well, anybody uses it, but it's used most commonly. The stereotype is that it's being used by criminals because it's untraceable. And so people go on the dark web. They conduct shady transactions with this stuff, like drugs. You can hire hitmen. All kinds of things. And the transaction is not done in money because that has to go through a bank.
Okay? Now, whereas that's true, and I'm not denying that, is that the majority of Bitcoin use?
That's just a stereotype that goes along with it.
Okay? Well, right, but there's stereotypes that native people can put their ear to the ground and hear buffalo from the next state, all right? Not all stereotypes are true.
Well, about a year ago, Aaron Shammo was arrested on drug charges, and he is accused of selling pills containing the powerful opioid fentanyl on the web.
That's some strong stuff.
And he's been selling it to thousands of people all over the United States, at one point raking in $2.8 million in less than a year, and he's holding all of it in Bitcoin.
Well, that does not bode well for my stereotype rebuttal.
The FBI busted him, and they got 500,000 pills, and it ranked among the largest of its kind in the country. Authorities also found $1 million in cash stuffed in trash bags.
Wow.
Surprisingly, Shammo has pleaded not guilty. I don't know where that money came from.
No, it wasn't me. His legal counsel will be Shaggy.
Wouldn't be. So he was busted in Utah, okay? And, you know, as usual, the authorities, when they get assets, they seize it, they keep it, they sell it. But what the hell do you do with Bitcoin?
Time out. Wait a minute. This guy was running out of Utah?
Yes.
So he was like, I got millions of dollars. I can set up shop anywhere, coast to coast. Heck, I work in Bitcoin. I could set up outside of the U.S. I know the perfect place. Momoville.
Yes.
Why? Where alcohol can't even be bought outside of a state liquor store. What are you doing, man? Like,
okay. So
Mexico is still a thing, you know?
It is. It is, but he did not go to Mexico. He went to Utah. It's a nice place, dude.
It's way prettier than outside of my house, but, I mean, as far as running illegal drug operations, there's a better spot.
Okay. So they seized his stuff. One of the things they also seized was his $500,000 in Bitcoin.
Oh, only $500,000. Not enough trash bags for that.
No, he, he would convert it to regular money, but they kept it. They had his coin base or whatever they call it. And while he was waiting for trial, that that $500,000 exploded in value to about $8.5 million. Because when they got it, it wasn't worth that much. But now, right. Now it is. What do you do?
I mean, what can you do?
They sold it. Proceeds of the Bitcoin sale will be held until the case is resolved, and then decisions will be made about where the money goes, according to police spokesman. So they're just like, hey, what do you do when your $500,000 becomes $8.5 million? They sold it, and then they're still holding it because they have to wait until the trial is resolved. But why not, you know, when it hits super-duper highs?
Hey, you know, it sounds fair to me. Turn that money around, deposit some of it in drug rehabilitation programs, and put the rest into the state healthcare system.
Something,
having people hooked on fentanyl and having prescription drug problems, they're gonna have physical health effects, and they're also, you know, there's just gonna be problems with drug addiction and things like that. You should put that money into trying to patch the hole that he made.
Well, that's what they're doing. Now they've got $8.5 million to do it with.
Because, yeah. That's a lot of potholes to be filled, so to speak.
All right. Let's talk about Native American populations in every state. How many people, how many Native Americans do you think live where you live?
I don't think many. But my question would be, how many people are self-reported Native Americans and how many are registered into a tribe, you know?
Well, what's generally agreed upon is there are a lot more Native Americans now than there were, because the population of Natives reached its lowest point back in 1900 with fewer than a quarter million Indians living at that time. A quarter million across the entire United States. Today, 5.5 million Americans identify as at least half. Okay, so
wow.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
With more than 2.5 million more, oh no, 2.5 million that are fully Native American. So half of the 5.5 million are full-blooded. The mm-hmm. Cherokee Nation is the most prevalent Native group in the country, comprising the majority of the indigenous population. Now, most Natives reside in sovereign states, which are on the reservations. But, you know, over time, a lot of folks have moved to cities and towns outside of the reservations. So they don't live on the reservation, but they live nearby. In fact, the Native group with the largest number of residents to identify within each state is not necessarily indigenous to that state. Take the Blackfeet Nation, for example. This is the largest Indian group in New Hampshire, even though they originated in Montana. But
yeah, imagine that. Thanks, Andrew Jackson.
Do you think it's all his fault?
Google it.
All right. So in California, that's where you live, right?
For now.
There are 287,000 Natives in California. Now, I like this. What tribe is this? The Mexican American Indian? What kind of a tribe is that?
Well, I don't know if it's a registered tribe, but wouldn't it be Native Americans that were in Mexico during the foundation of the country? And so they're Native Americans, but the imaginary lines cut them out of America, so they don't have a nationally recognized tribe. That's a shot in the dark.
It could be. But they just label that as the largest Native group, Mexican American Indians. There are 40,000 of them. Colorado, where I live, the Navajo are the largest group, and they're just over 6,000. The total population is 50,000, so not even approaching the 287,000 that live in California. Mm-hmm. Another one that I marked off, Hawaii. Can you believe that Hawaii has a Cherokee population? Okay, that's the biggest group, 491.
Oh, wow.
Of over 3,000 total. Let's see here. That's a lot of
natives on the island,
right? 3,000. Well, it doesn't count the Pacific Islanders, the people who are native to Hawaii, but people native to to over
America,
here.
Yeah. That clearly, that's definitely not living on the reservation over there.
Yeah, yeah, over in Nevada, not Nevada people. It is Nevada.
Tell that to the people in Nevada.
The people in Nevada call it Nevada.
Then they'll agree with you.
They will. It's people on the East Coast that call it Nevada. The largest group is the Paiutes, and they're about 5,000 of a total of 30,000.
Wow, dude. I didn't even know there was 30,000 people in Nevada, let alone natives.
30,000 natives. State population is 3 million.
Whew. That's just a little bit bigger than the city I live in.
We mentioned Utah. It's got similar to Nevada, 30,000 natives.
Nevada.
Okay. Jordan, what?
She agrees with me. She's sad that you're calling it Nevada.
No, it is Nevada. Ask the people of Nevada. They will tell you.
Don't make babies cry.
And last, Washington
Fort
State.
Nevada.
Washington State, where we're from, the largest native group is the Puget Sound Salish, which I believe we're a part of. Salish, whatever. And there are 12,000 of them out of a total native population of 93,000. So, not bad. That brings me to ancient DNA, which has discovered a completely unknown population of Native Americans, unknown to history.
How so?
Well, it's widely thought that the first American settlers crossed over into Alaska from Siberia via the Bering Land Bridge, right? Because it once linked up Asia, North America. So you're talking thousands of years ago, they came over on that Bering Land Bridge, is what they thought, right? But scientists are always debating how the travelers actually made their journey. And what's even less clear is who the people were, how many groups made the trip, and how they settled into the new continent that they arrived in. And that's
I also want to know over what time frame. Like, was this like, oh, let's sail over here today? Or was this several generations of travel that happened tens of thousands of years
ago? They don't know. All they know is, like, you know, where folks originated and they ended up all over the world. That's all they know. They don't know when it happened, okay? So they discovered this girl up in Alaska? Yes, up in Alaska.
Are you sure it's not pronounced Alaska?
Yes, I am sure. Okay. In the local people's tongue, this girl that they discovered, her name means a sunrise girl child. And even though she only lived for 6 weeks, she's already told scientists more than we ever knew about the very first Native Americans. The sunrise girl child lived about 11,000 years ago in what's now called Alaska, and her ancient DNA reveals not only the origins of Native American society, but reminds the world of an entire population of people forgotten by history. Anthropologist Ben Potter says, "We didn't even know this population existed. It would be difficult to overstate the importance of this newly revealed people to our understanding of how ancient populations came to inhabit the Americas." So you're talking about DNA sourced from a place they didn't even know was around.
I'm still confused. Where did they get the DNA from?
This girl who's 11,000 years old.
Like, did some 11,000-year-old mummy just wander into Anchorage? Like, you didn't even tell me where this came from.
Okay. Well, they found another infant. I'm telling you right now, okay?
All right. Let me know.
They found another girl that they named Dawn Twilight Girl. Were found by Potter and fellow researchers in an interior Alaska archaeological site.
There we go.
Called Upward Sun River in 2013. In a new study, they report that the genetic analysis shows that she belonged to a forgotten people called the ancient Berigians, unknown to science until now. Before, there were only two recognized branches of early Native Americans, okay? So they called them Northern and Southern. And they figured that was it. You know, if you're Native American, you came from one of these two groups. But when researchers sequenced her genome, the earliest complete genetic profile, it matched neither of them. But she's definitely Native American, right? And so they concluded that she was part of the single founding ancestral group that split from East Asians about 35,000 years ago.
So okay? Essentially the North and the South descended from her people.
Yes, exactly. And they think that they moved as a single mass migration about 15,000 years later. Because then they were living, they split genetically, and then 15,000 years later, they split again, and then they split again into the two groups, okay? One of the groups was the ancient Burigians, and the other group was the ancestors of all Native Americans. So they actually think that this one died out.
Okay.
But it's possible that that the division was a creation. They don't know. All they know is they've never seen this genetic material before, okay? So it's the first time that we've had direct genomic evidence that all Native Americans can be traced back to one source population via a single founding migration event. So kind of cool, huh?
Amazing.
Given the nature of the field of research, the scope of the new findings, yeah, it's unlikely that this hypothesis will remain uncontested for long. You know, people argue about this stuff all the time. But for now, that's what we got. So...
Well, what an interesting ride. I hope it's not another, you know, what do they call that fake one? The Kennewick man or whatever?
Oh, yeah. Fake news.
Yeah. The fake news native.
Exactly. All right. Well, anyway, that will do it for us today. But we'll be back next week with more stimulating Native Talk Radio, available online at nativetalk.net.
Next time with more baby cries.
See you guys next week.
This is the NativeTalk.net radio podcast. We're not sure how our voices get from here to in your ear, but does it really matter? Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.